So, okay, so let me explain what you just watched. Did you know the Flash has a nemesis? He has a couple of them. But in this case, his nemesis, the Trickster, I don't name these guys, seriously, has attached an explosive device to him. If he slows down, it explodes. But I love the realization that the Flash comes to. As fast as I am, as powerful as I am, I can't run forever. His mentor knows how to escape. He wants him to run faster. Not longer, but faster. He wants him to move at a speed that will allow his body to pass through a solid object, leaving the explosive device on the other side of the object. I absolutely would love to have this power. Wouldn't that be cool to go through a solid wall? That would be awesome. But Barry thinks it's not possible. But again, his mentor tells him, I believe in you. He talks him through the process, and encouraging him to move faster than he thought possible. And well, Barry couldn't find a wall, but he found a truck. And in the clip you saw, he passed through the truck. The explosive device, without breaking the circuit, was left behind. And voila, nothing happened. No explosion. And well, I know he is a comic book hero. And I know he has super speed, and I do not. But I have to be very honest with you. I feel like this sometimes. Things are attached to my life that I'm afraid if they ever catch up with me, well, they're going to explode. So my solution is run. Keep moving. Don't give them a chance to catch up, but just like the Flash, you do understand something, right? Nobody can run forever. You can't escape it. Eventually, something's going to happen, and you're going to have to slow down, and that thing that's in your past, or that thing that you're struggling with, that thing that you're afraid is going to catch up with you, it will happen. And then along comes God. And well, like Barry Allen's mentor, God has a solution. He has a way to pass through my difficult situation. But it's not speed up. What does he tell me? Be still. And be still and know that I'm God. And that just sounds counterproductive, doesn't it? Because if I'm afraid of something catching up to me, the moment I stop to be still, doesn't that give it the chance to catch up? How in the world can that ever solve my life trouble? Well, here's something that you need to remember. The problem is I'm trying to run through the very thing that is the problem. It's called life. Listen to Solomon as Ecclesiastes chapter 2, Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 2 through 10. This is Solomon's view of life. It is useless. Useless, said the philosopher. Life is useless, all useless. You spend your life working, laboring, and what do you have to show for it? Generations come and generations go, but the world just stays the same. The sun still rises and it still goes down, going wearily back to where it must and start all over again. The wind blows south and the wind blows north, round and around, back again. Every river flows into the sea, but the sea is not full. The water returns to where the rivers began and starts all over again. Everything leads to weariness, a weariness too great for words. Our eyes can never see enough to be satisfied. Our ears can never hear enough. What has happened before will happen again. What has been done before will be done again. There is nothing new in the whole world. Look, they say, here's something new. But no, it has all happened before. Long before we were born, No one remembers what has happened and in the past, and no one in the days to come will remember what has happened between now and then. And as I read that, it sounds like a recap of last year, doesn't it? And honestly, that's depressing. I mean, that makes me want to go home and find my bed and crawl up in my bed and pull my covers up over me and say, what difference does it make? What difference does it make whether I get out of bed and go out, if it's all just going to keep going and going and going and it's all going to be just hopeless? What's the point? What am I here to do? And well, it is kind of depressing, but old Solomon has come to a wise conclusion. Here it is. You can't outrun the troubles of life because life is full of trouble. One way to look at it is while you're trying to stay ahead of the trouble from your past and outrun the trouble from your present, really what you're doing is running to the trouble of your future. Again, you probably think, man, if you're trying to cheer me up, you're not doing a very good job. Solomon came up with a term for how people that just try to run through life and outrun the things that they're afraid of, he came up with a term for it, a nice little slogan. It's called, it's like chasing the wind. You ever tried this exercise before? It has the word exercise in it, so I have not. But out there just chasing the wind as it's blowing, can you catch it? Absolutely not. Because the moment you think you're going to catch it, well, it changes. And then the moment you think you're going to catch it, it's not there. So chasing after the wind is a futile exercise. And Solomon kind of tells us this idea that we can somehow run through life as fast as we can, as quick as we can. And just because I'm moving so fast that I'm going to outrun my trouble, Solomon says, no. Because you understand, that's life. Job echoes these thoughts. This is what Job says. Mortals, so that's all of us. Born of women, well, that's all of us. Are a few days and full of trouble. So the problem is no matter where I move, how far I run, where I go, I can't escape the trouble because I'm the trouble. I take it with me wherever I go. Moving from one city to another does not change who I am. It might change my situation for a little while, and things are okay for a little while, but eventually, all of those things that I once was and still am will resurface in the same area. My mom laughs at the fact that we sold a house in Lake Monticello, and then we bought a house in Waynesboro, and slowly but surely, as you look at the walls and the paint and everything, it's going back into, guess what it's starting to look like? It's the same color scheme at the other house because guess what? That's who we are. Eventually, the life that you move into will become the life that you left, and around she goes. And well, that just sounds chaotic, doesn't it? I'm tired. I'm tired of dealing with all these problems. I want the ability to pass through my problems. And well, good news is that's today's lesson. We're going to talk about how slowing down allows us to pass through the difficult times in our life because I want this. That's what I want. I want to know how is it I can pass through all of these difficult times. And well, this is a familiar verse, especially if you've been to a funeral. You've probably heard this one read a lot. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack for nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures, and he leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right path for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And as I read that, I could just see people kind of close their eyes. Yeah. I want to meditate on this for just a moment. Sometimes, folks, with all of the stuff that we like to do and all the fancy things we like to wrap around it and make these packages, it's just good to go back to basics. And this, my friends, is about as basic as it gets when it gets to having your relationship with God. Most will note these again are verses that we read at funerals. And the reason we read them at funerals is because there's such great comfort, because that's a time of trouble. Most scholars believe that this particular psalm was not written by young David. Like Ecclesiastes, it was written by old David. Ecclesiastes was written by old Solomon. This is written by old David. And so David is looking back at the past, at all of the trouble, and he's beginning to think about all the stuff that he's been through. Things like the early days as a shepherd. Was there trouble? Absolutely. There were lions and bears that wanted to eat them, remember? He told them, I had to kill them with my own bare hands. He's thinking about defeating a giant. Was there trouble? Oh, yeah. There was this great big dude that wanted to take over Israel. And nobody wanted to stand up to him. And little David picked up a rock and a slingshot. And he went out to go out and fight a giant with no armor and no nothing. That's trouble, folks. He's looking back at the desolation of the wilderness. Was there trouble? Absolutely. Remember? King Saul wasn't so ready to give up his throne, and so he decided the best way not to give up my throne is to kill David. So he chased David throughout the wilderness, and he went out there all of this time trying to kill David. And David had to spend the first part of his kingly life running from Saul because Saul refused to relinquish that throne. He's probably thinking about the burdens of kingship. Boy, if you've ever been in leadership, you know this is trouble, right? I mean, you've got to worry about what people think. You've got to worry about how to raise the money to pay the bills. You've got to worry about, you know, how not to overtax or people get upset. You've got to worry about the morality of a country. You've got all of this weight on you. You've got to worry about the wars being fought, all of this stuff going on. And David is probably looking back at this psalm and writing this psalm, and he's thinking, how did I ever make it through this? You know it's on his mind, right? The sin with Bathsheba? Trouble? Oh, yeah. I mean, there was David, where he wasn't supposed to be, looking out and made the decision to do what he wasn't supposed to do. And then when he tried to cover up what he had done, he ended up doing something even worse and murdering somebody. And it almost cost him his kingdom. It definitely has some consequences to it. And David is looking back at this, and he's thinking, how did I make it through all of this? How on earth can one man make it through all of this and still be praising God at the end of it? Wouldn't you like to know how to do that? I mean, unlike Solomon, who saw life as hopeless and full of trouble, David found hope in the middle of the chaos. I want that. Because sometimes I feel like my life is nothing but chaos. There's always something going on trying to get my attention. And I would love to have a roadmap of how do I get through the chaos. And it's just me and God. How do I get in that zone like Barry Allen got when he began to run and he felt the lightning and the wind on his face. And there, how do I get in that kind of a zone as a Christian where I can just be me and God? For just a moment, so I can pass through the difficult times. And well, since David went through so much, he gave us a really great roadmap. Simplistic roadmap, not complicated. And it began with this statement. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack for nothing. He begins with this simple notion that gives God two distinct titles. First, he calls him Lord. That's a big statement, because that means David now realizes the Lord is the authority. Not what I think, not what I want, not what is popular, not what somebody said, this is how you're supposed to do it. This is David has made a decision. The Lord is the person that has the guidebook. And whether I like it or not, or whether I agree with it or not, or whether society says it's popular or not, does not matter, because he is the Lord. And if I'm going to make it through the difficult times, I have to have that. Of course, he also gives him the second title. And trust me, David doesn't hand this title out freely. He calls him the shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. And when David uses those words in this psalm, this is a man that knows what a shepherd is. We've talked about all of these things before. What is a shepherd? Well, he's the provider, the protector, the guide, and if need be, the disciplinarian. For who? The sheep. You're probably thinking, that sounds a lot like a parent. Yeah, it is. It's a parent, it's a pastor. There's a lot of things that go into this title. But when David hands out this title to God, he's saying, God, you're in charge, and I understand. Sometimes you're going to have to provide for me. Sometimes you're going to have to protect me. Sometimes you're going to have to guide me. And sometimes you're just going to flat out have to take out the rod and the staff and discipline me. All so that I can pass through my difficult times, keeping myself focused on you. Now, as we begin to continue reading through Psalm chapter 23, David comes to another conclusion, though. When I make the Lord my shepherd, I have everything I need. Think about that for a second. When I decide to make God both Lord of my life, the authority, and the shepherd of my life, the provider, the protector, the guide, and the disciplinarian, and I accept him in that role, I've got everything I need to pass through the difficult times. The toolbox is full. I don't need another passage. I don't need another scripture. I don't need a self-help book. Okay, I don't need a website. I don't need a Facebook page. I've got everything I need in those two statements. The problem is you have to take the two statements and make the Lord your shepherd. That's your choice. Unlike a sheep who is purchased and you're owned by the shepherd, God gives us a choice in the matter. I can choose his way or my way. Now, in that, I do want you to see this. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. When we recite this, we say these words, but I don't think we grasp the concept of what God is saying. So let me make sure you see it. Life will take me through the darkest valley. Notice it doesn't say, if I walk through the darkest valley. It says, even though. David realizes trouble, she's just around the corner. The darkest valley that I'm trying to avoid, it's just around the corner. There is no safe way through this life, this thing that we call life. It's full of trouble. And so David realizes that, you know what? There is just going to be trouble. We're going to dive a little deeper into this darkness walking thing in the next series that we're going to do. But for now, I just want you to think about what are our tendencies when we hit those dark moments. Be afraid. There's just something about darkness that makes us afraid. Something about when the lights go out and we're not in a, quote, safe spot and it begins to get dark. We began to get afraid. We went to Philly a few years ago, and you walked everywhere in Philadelphia. You walked at least to the subway, but we did a lot of walking. And there were moments when it was summertime and we were on vacation, and so we were out walking after dark. And funny, when you leave the big area of the hustle and bustle of the touristy area, and you're heading toward, you go through some back alleys, and I want to tell you something. When you're walking through those back alleys in a city that you know nothing very little about, but you've heard horror stories about, you know what your tendency is when you're afraid? We speed up. Our steps are a little brisker. We have a little more energy in where we're going. We're paying really close attention. We become very hyper aware of what's going on, and every little thing that we hear a noise, or we hear something, and our tendency is we want to speed up. We want to go faster. And the interesting thing is God doesn't want us to do that. You see, the problem with being in the darkness, when we're in the valley, in the shadow of darkness, the fear of darkness makes us feel all alone. When I am in a dark moment in my life, I can have all the people in the universe talking to me, coaching me, giving me advice, telling me this too shall pass, telling me God works for all the... They can quote all the scripture. But when I am in that dark moment, when I'm in that valley, I'm all alone. And well, that's the thing, is that David sees now, looking back on it, writing Psalm 23, he was never actually ever alone. You see, that's the benefit of hindsight. It's 2020. When you look back, you can see that even in those darkest moments, God was right there with you. And if he was with you in those darkest moments, then the one that you're in or the one that you're getting ready to head into, he'll be there too. When I'm traveling through the darkness, I feel vulnerable. I mean, okay, my eyes are not as good as they used to be, and I don't see as well in the dark as I used to. When I was a kid, I loved darkness, okay? We played in the dark, from Ghost in the Graveyard to Capture the Flag to probably some things that I shouldn't have done when it was dark outside. We played in the dark, but my eyes aren't as good as they used to be, and going out in the dark, I feel vulnerable because I can't see as much, right? I can't see as clear. Even driving now, when it begins to get dark, it's not as much fun as it used to be because I feel a little more vulnerable when I can't see everything that's going on. And well, David realizes here in Psalm 23 that he was always protected. Even though he was vulnerable, that God was always there with that rod and that staff, that thing that is used to chase away the wolves but at the same time pull the sheep back in. God was protecting him, sometimes even from himself. You have to realize, sometimes that protection extends when you're going to do something dumb. God has to reach out and pull you back in because he's protecting you from yourself. And so he begins to look at all of these things, and well, he comes to the realization that in the darkness, God does not want us to fear. He wants us to feel his presence. When I'm going through those dark valleys and I'm feeling all alone and I'm feeling vulnerable, those are the times that God doesn't want me just to sit and cower. He wants me to feel his presence. That's the word comfort. You know, I can remember the days when I have trouble with dark moments, and God sends that person at the right time, at the right moment, and they're not there to give me a lesson. They're just there to sit and listen for a little bit, to let me feel comfort in the fact that I'm not alone. I'm not vulnerable. God is with me. But here's what we need to remember. In this dark moment of a valley, we have to move at the speed of God. And you know what? Sometimes God takes slowness in action. I want you to look at these little verses, as we are very familiar with them, and think about what David is really saying when he sings this Psalm 23 thing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. To pasture the valley means that I have to learn the lessons of me allowing God to be Lord and Shepherd. And the first thing is, God is not in a hurry. I am. Lord, I want this over with now. God said, nope, not so fast. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Take a moment. He's willing to take a slower pace with the sheep. And he begins with this idea of lie down. Lie down? Are you crazy? I'm in the dark valley. No, lie down is a bad idea, God. Nobody lies down, right? We want to move. And God's like, just take a moment. Just take a breath. I've got a safe spot in the middle of all of this darkness. It's called the green pasture. And I just want you to stay here for a minute. I just want you to lie down and wallow in that nice, cool, green grass. Go ahead, sheep. Take a bite and feel the nourishment that you can get from there. take a moment and take a breath and take a nap in this nice, cool place where you know I'm going to wrap myself around you. Just lie down. Yeah, I know you can hear it. The darkness is all around and you can hear the coyotes howling off in the background. You know there are rustlers out there waiting to steal sheep. But just for this moment, lie down. Don't be in such a hurry to run. Because you know what? I'm here with you. And as he moves on from the makes me lie down in green pastures, he says he leads me beside quiet waters. Now, as we leave that pasture and we head to the river to wash down the grass that we ate, you know, we need something to drink. Oftentimes when we get to the river and the river is moving kind of swift and the water is very loud. Have you ever been near one of those big rushing water? We went to Niagara Falls and it's deafening to stand out there. But even in a river when it's moving swift, it's kind of noisy. And sometimes when I'm really, really thirsty and I see that running river, I'm like, I got this, God. I can do this. Look. And God's like, take a moment. Remember, we're walking through this valley together. Yeah, I know you're thirsty and I know you think you can handle the swift water, but I got a better place for you. Just stick with me. Let's walk just a little further together. And eventually, I'm going to give you now, you understand what quiet water is, right? It's water that's still. It's water that's not moving so fast. It's not as dangerous. It gives me the ability not to try to lap up water as fast as I can and not try to fall in so I don't drown. It means I can take my time and I can approach that river as God's sheep, and I can gently begin to drink, and I can gently allow it to feed inside of me. Oh my gosh, wouldn't you like to have that sometimes in your darkness? When everything is going around and it just seems like life is a giant pinball machine and you're bouncing from one bumper to the other, wouldn't you like to just somebody say, I got a quiet place for you? But you understand something. You have to let me lead you there because you don't know where this quiet place is. But I know the way. You have to get behind me and allow me to lead you to a place where you can actually take a moment to take a drink. Again, to be still. Slowing everything down. He says he refreshes my soul. I love the way David writes this. Because first David takes care of the external. David takes care of food and water. Get the basic needs met first. And once God gets those, then he turns his attention to not the storm on the outside of my life. He turns his attention to the storm that's raging on the inside of my life. And I just want to tell you something. As chaotic as my life gets on the outside, the external, the battle and the storms that rage on the inside of me are a lot more violent than anything that you see outside. A lot of times I can be perfectly composed on the outside, but I am just messed up on the inside. Things are swirling and turning, and I'm like grasping for control. And my soul gets very empty when he does this. And so here's what he says. Let me take care of that for you. Let me refresh your soul. I love the word refresh. It means to revive and restore strength. Let me take that soul that's been beaten down and sapped and just take a moment and live in me. And you know what? I'll give you strength. Renovate. To freshen up. He's not doing a demolition and a reconstruct. He's just going to do some renovation. Patch the hull of the ship a little bit to make sure she's not still leaking. He's gonna test the mast to make sure it's not cracked. He's going to make sure things are going the way that he's going to make sure that you're sound and ready to go before you leave this space. Because you do know what's on the other side of the space, right? The dark valley you just left. When you came into these green pastures and these quiet waters, you do get It's just a little resting stop for you to catch your breath. Eventually, you have to leave this spot and you have to go back out there. And the second you walk out that door, life's trouble's there. But he says, you know what? I can refresh your soul, replenish, restore, maintain by renewing the supply. I can resupply your soul. But you realize it only happens when you lie down in the quiet pasture, in the green pasture, and go by the quiet waters. If you're just going to keep running, you're never going to get to this. Eventually, you have to slow down. And then he goes on and he says, and you guide me along the right path for his name's sake. Now, I want you to pay attention to that. Because we seem to like this, but we don't like this. You see, it says that he is going to be the guide. Now, I don't know much about being a guide, but I do know this. The guide is the person that's in front. Okay? There is a difference between a shepherd and a sheep herder. A shepherd gets out in front of the flock and has the flock follow. A sheep herder gets behind the flock and chases them where you want them to go. By the way, this is a dumb idea for sheep. They don't respond well to being sheep herded. They respond well to a shepherd. Okay? So the first thing is, if you're going to let him be the guide, then you have to get him out in front. That means you're moving at his pace. It means if he takes one step, you take one. If he stands still, you stand still. If he says stop and look, you stop and look. That's what it means to have a guide. But I also want you to see it says he chooses the right path. Not the easiest path. Not the path I want. Not the path that's going to make me comfortable. Not the path that's going to have an air conditioner with it. God says, I am going to choose the path that is best for you. And guess what? Sometimes that's a hard path. Sometimes there's some rocks and some hills and some other dark valleys and some other things that I have to deal with. Because I'm going along the path. I just have to trust God. You've got my back on this one. You see, remember the ultimate goal of this? It says it right here, for his name's sake. The ultimate goal of God the shepherd is to make the sheep a testimony for the shepherd. The world should be able to look at our life. Notice I use the word should. The world should be able to look at our life in the middle of all of these chaotic times and see a tranquil peace amongst the church. Did they see that in 2020? Not in my life. They had the wrong address and they were looking for tranquil peace in my life. Do they see that in us though? When everybody is running around like a chicken with their head cut off, when everybody else is all up in a tizzy, everybody else is... They should look at the church and say, well, why aren't you upset? Let me tell you why. Because the Lord is my shepherd. And I don't lack for anything. He's taken me to the pastures and we've lied down and we took a rest. And he took me beside those quiet waters and I got a moment to catch my breath and I took a drink. And he's built my soul up even though this world has beat it down. The reason that we can't do this is because we won't stop moving long enough to let God do the things that he wants to do. We're like the Flash. Run faster. Move faster. Don't let it catch up with me because the moment you stop, you know it's going to happen. Boom. It'll explode. And Jesus tells us, not so. David tells us, not so. Matter of fact, David goes on to say this in verse 5. You, so the Lord, the shepherd, prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil and my cup overflows. Now, here's the first thing I want you to see. The enemies are still there. Would it not have been a better meal if God had just snuffed out my enemies first, then set the table, and then I could sit there and eat in peace without all of my enemies around me? That's not the point. The point is that guess what? Life is full of trouble. Those things that are troubling you aren't going to just magically go away because you wished on something to make it go away. You're still going to have trouble. The difference is that even though all of the trouble is around you, God's going to roll out the picnic blanket and put the fried chicken and all the trimmings out there and say, just sit down and eat. I'll take care of the enemies, but you're still going to see them swirling all around you. Amen. While you're sitting there biting and you're trying to eat, they're still going to be hurling their insults and still hurling the things that they want you to react to, hoping to get a reaction out of you. And God said, just chill out. Take a moment. I'm going to set you aside. I'm going to fill your cup to the point that it's going to overflow. You just keep drinking from me, and guess what? These enemies, they don't go away. But man, I'm not walking through this valley anymore. And if this wasn't enough, if this wasn't the go-to moment where you're like, yes, I think I'll try this thing at Godspeed, he says, I'm going to take care of today, and I'm going to take care of tomorrow. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life. Wow. How long am I going to live? Have no idea. But you choose this path, the Lord is my shepherd, and you don't have to walk a single one of them by yourself. I don't care how dark it gets. The light will always shine in you because you've got this. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So it doesn't end at the grave, which we all think it does. He says, you know what? When you choose me, Lord is my shepherd, we're going to go beyond the grave. And this is a forever relationship. That sounds kind of cool, doesn't it? Then why am I in such a hurry? Well, because a lot of times I have the Solomon mentality instead of the David mentality. You see, passing through the darkness depends on being still in the light. Jesus says, I am the light of the world. Sometimes we struggle so much with the darkness is because we moved faster than the light. And David says, don't do that. Take a step back and let the light lead your path. Allow the light to give you something. So many times when we do sermons, they're beat you up sermons. You go home and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm a bonehead. I'm a sinner. I'm broken. Here's what I want to take you from here. This particular sermon, hopefully you're going to leave here today and you're going to feel encouraged that you know what? Darkness is going to come, but God is willing. Now, I do want you to see something important, though, as we close this sermon. David had a decision to make. Oh, man, we like the green pastures. We like the quiet waters. We want the refreshing of our soul. We want to be able to eat our meals in front of our enemies and not be afraid. I want to live forever. I want to do all of this. You do understand there was a condition to all of it, right? What was the condition? The Lord is my shepherd. I've taken Jesus as my Lord and Savior to shepherd my life. If I don't take that step, and I hate to tell you this, you're walking through those dark valleys, and you better learn how to run really fast. You better get a lot of endurance because you're going to be running for the rest of your life. Or you could take a different method through this valley. Step one, accept Christ as your personal Lord and Savior. Step two, allow Him to shepherd your life and move your life at the speed of God. Not force your speed to move at the speed of you. It's your decision. It's your choice. There are two ways through this valley, but there's only one way to survive it. That would be, the Lord is my shepherd. I'm going to ask the worship team to make their way back. And this morning, if you're here and you've never made that Lord is my shepherd moment. You've never had that moment in your life.